Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. The Warriors played their final game of the pre-All-Star break session of the season. They won 109-86 against the Sacramento Kings, fueled by a huge third quarter, 42-15. And to talk about it with me is my friend and frequent podcast partner, Nate Duncan, who does the Dunked On Basketball podcast, Twitter NBA show, and started doing the Twitter NBA show second screen, which is pretty cool, and I will eventually be a part of that as well after I get back from vacation. And so we go through the game, the big moments, Draymond getting ejected, and so many other things. Talk for about 25 minutes, I think. And also, this episode is sponsored by SeatGeek, the amazing best way that I use to buy and sell tickets. You can download the free SeatGeek app and use the promo code LOWARRIORS to get $20 back on your first order. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. So this is going to be like the All Papa G All The Time podcast, right?
I am totally fine with that, at least a little bit of it. I mean, that might have been... but we are, and I think that at this point they're in for the long haul, but we won't start there. I guess we'll talk a lot about the third quarter, or not a lot, but some about the third quarter. But what were you thinking at the end of the first half after Draymond got ejected? What were you expecting for that second half?
I thought it was going to be a rough game. We didn't know that Aaron Afolo was going to be out for the Kings until the second half, and I think that hurt them a little bit because they just ran out of bodies. But it seemed like JaVale had no hope guarding Cousins. They were double-teaming him. They were getting killed there. The offense looked horrible. Everyone was looked totally desultory out there. Green was going to be out, and it seemed like it could be go down to the end, and then they would have no one who could guard Cousins at the end. I tweeted and later felt embarrassed about it, given the outcome, that I thought it could be a real slog for them in the second half, and that was not the case.
There's an analog to something that I've noticed in the Warriors unit. I guess you call it the second unit, even though it has some starters out there. In the second and the fourth quarter, so when they had Durant, there was a lot of standing around on offense and just kind of letting KD do stuff. And once they switched it to Draymond, the ball moved better because everybody knew that was the only way they could score. And that's kind of what it was like in the second half defensively, where they had to be active because it was the only way it was going to work.
Yeah, and McCaw did not play at all in the first half. Then he came in the second. I thought that he was outstanding with some of the deflections that he had, his activity. He kept the ball moving, kind of had some nice driving kicks, got out in the break. So he was excellent. I think that his activity helped some as well.
Yeah, I thought that was a big difference. And the Kings did not, especially with Afolo, did not have the personnel to really exploit the Warriors going small. Kufos and Cousins had some stretches together, but not really in that second half. And then they didn't have guards.
Kevin Durant at the start of the third quarter. Maybe that was the first on trouble. Although really, I thought it was the defense much more than, I mean, they converted their shots, which they had not been in the first half, and the Kings made theirs, but it was the defense. I mean, there was a stretch where they just held the Kings scoreless for like a 5-minute period and got like four steals in a row or something like that.
Right. It was a 22-0 stretch, and the Warriors in that time had forced five turnovers, four of which were live ball. So they had 10 fast break points, and the Kings, as I said, didn't score at all. And that isn't going to be represented every single night, but the idea of defense fueling offense was a part of the Warriors' success 2 years ago and certainly was a part of this game.
Yeah, that third quarter damage, ultimately some of the stats from that, 42-15 on 26 possessions. So the Warriors had a 160 offensive rating and Sacramento had a 57 offensive rating. 82% true shooting for the Warriors, and they actually missed some free throws. So they had an 85% e-field goal. And then the Kings, 21% e-field goal, turned it over on 23% of their possessions. And the Warriors had four block shots in addition to all the steals they had.
Yeah, I had forgotten that it was four blocks. I remembered Curry had one and Durant had one. I'd forgotten about the other two Durant blocks, but just a ridiculous stretch by them. And when you consider that Draymond Green has largely been their best steal guy, at least off the top of my head, to do that with him out was impressive as well.
The Kings just completely imploded once they stopped scoring. Whether it was Richardson, Ben McLemore, he had a play where he almost got stripped and then got blocked. How you can get stripped and then maybe get blocked on the same play, I have no idea. But Steph, and have Steph do it to you, like Ben McLemore getting his jump shot blocked by Steph, that's pretty remarkable. And Collison is the only point guard that they had available in the whole game. Cousins started pouting, had a couple of calls, then just stopped getting back on defense. And when it snowballs against the Kings, it snowballs quick because they're not exactly a mentally tough team.
Right. Our friend Tim Bontemps brought up during the game that the Warriors are such a great front-running team, and the Kings are one of the worst come-from-behind teams in that way, because once they lose it, they really lose it. So I always knew there was a possibility that it was going to snowball like that. I actually thought it was going to happen in the first quarter when the Warriors went up 10, and then the Kings did a nice job getting back into it.
Yeah, at one point in that third quarter, Golden State had 33 points on 17 possessions.
Good Lord. And missed free. I think they probably had a couple missed free throws during that time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I liked what I saw a lot from McCaw. Like one play that he had, Matt Barnes tried to post him up and McCaw like fought hard and got around him and was able to deflect the pass. Like that's something I've been critical of him for, not being tough enough on some of those post-ups where he's just kind of skinny and he worked a little bit harder there. I thought that was good. Do you think McCaw deserves to be ahead of Ian Clark in the rotation right now? He was not in the first half, but obviously started the second half when they needed more size.
So I wrote about this a little bit in the Every Player thing that I'm doing for The Athletic now on their app, and my working idea is that I like McCaw more with Durant and Curry at the end of the first and third quarter, and Clark is better more as a kind of a different kind of Klay Thompson replacement. You've talked before about the problems with a Curry-Clark backcourt, so maybe working something like that. But what's hurt Clark in that time is that Thompson is now a lot of times playing the beginning of the second, the fourth, and that would be a time that Clark would actually work.
Yeah, that makes sense too. What did you think of the struggles in the first half, though? And that was kind of following on the heels of the Denver game. I thought the defense was really awful in the first half. The Kings got whatever they wanted from three, made a couple of tough ones. They had no answer for Cousins. JaVale was getting lit up. I thought it was pretty ugly in the first half.
Yeah, they had a rough stretch that after that early going where they were just basically getting a lot of offense and the Kings missed some shots. Like I thought that was a little bit more good fortune than they usually have for a good stretch. And then after that, the defense fell apart. They weren't executing. Even in the early part, there were some plays where they weren't executing. And then offensively, they were listless. They weren't getting much in transition. They weren't getting much in transition after that beginning stretch. And then they didn't get into any sort of a rhythm. Durant had a nice first quarter, but kind of struggled in that point. And they still have issues with that second unit. I understand why Kerr has gone to it during the regular season with Draymond, but when that unit struggles, they really, really struggle.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's really, they don't have the spacing. I thought that unit actually worked a little bit better in the couple of games that Livingston was out when they had McCaw in there, just because McCaw was spacing out to the three-point line. When it's Livingston, Andre, Draymond, then McAdoo is in there. I think I want to give that unit a chance once Wes returns to see if having him at the high post making passes, like that's not something that they trust McAdoo to do at all. And then get more spacing from West too for Livingston to go to work in the post, maybe that unit can work. But I do think that offensively, it's been pretty ugly in these last few games.
I bet Ian Clark is missing David West's absence too, because he's their best cutter off the bench and David West is their best cut finder. And without him out, you know, McAdoo can't make those plays. Before we move on and talk about the rest of the game, want to take a little bit of time to talk about SeatGeek. Nate and I are both lucky enough to get to go to a lot of games and events like that live in person, and it is an experience that is impossible to replicate. And whether it's a great game like some of the ones that we've seen, or a game like this, which was big for a quarter and then ended up being a blowout, it's an amazing experience. And Oracle in particular, if that's somewhere you're close to or something you're interested in, is a great way to do that. And the best way to buy and sell tickets, but for focus on buy for this, is SeatGeek. SeatGeek is an amazing app to use for this because they are an aggregator, which means that you don't have to go to a bunch of different ticket sites. For people who enjoy Kayak, which I actually used to buy a flight today, it's the same type of an idea. They have a lot of different places, run through it together. And also they use DealScore. And what DealScore tries to do is combine ticket quality and ticket price to tell you what the best deals are. And I am very confident in my own abilities, having made a living buying and selling tickets earlier in my life, feels like a lifetime ago, that I know what's a good value and what isn't. And what I kept on finding when I've been using SeatGeek to buy tickets for myself, for my family, for things that I don't cover, is that they do a really, really, really good job. I've ended up trusting their scores on a lot of things. And I know the places I go for things, I know them very well, whether it's AT&T Park for a Giants game or a Niners game or whatever else, or a concert. And they do an amazing job there. And I love just the way that they put everything together. It's very well thought out. It's very straightforward. And you can check it out. You download the free SeatGeek app. And then if you go over to the settings tab, you enter the promo code LO Warriors. That's LO Warriors for Locked On Warriors. And the way that they do this is that if you enter that promo code, the first time you buy something, tickets to a show, tickets to a game, whatever you're going to do, they will send you $20 back. And that's awesome. So you get $20 back for you as long as you do your, as long as you do a good job, you will get a great value on tickets, and you'll get $20, and you'll tell them that you came from us. So it's really an amazing way to make all of this work. I appreciate it. And a great way to check out an app that I do personally use and personally enjoy. Again, that's SeatGeek and the LO Warriors promo code.
So what did you think of the Draymond ejection? It was odd. We felt like there was, it was going to be a problem. Maybe in theory it fired them up. Who know, you never know what to make of that or not. But I mean, supposedly the Kerr ejection fired them up in the last game for like 2 minutes, and then they fell out of it again.
It certainly seemed justified from what we could see, based on, it was one of those where he got really mad on the first one and got the technical and then never calmed down. And when you don't, when you get riled back up again, they didn't have a maintained camera shot on him, so you couldn't tell exactly if it dissipated and then fired back up. But I also thought that the call against him wasn't really a problem, you know, and even if it was, you know, shaky.
Well, I think they wanted it, what they wanted to travel.
Yeah,
that's what it was. I think, and Cousins had, Kerr talked about this in the post game, that they missed the earlier travel on Cousins. And so I think it was the cumulative effect of, number one, it being Draymond's third foul. And then number two, the fact that they thought he traveled before the foul ever took place. I thought it was a pretty obvious foul. And I didn't think it was a travel either. It was awkward, but it wasn't a travel. Boogie made a fantastic and one on the play. And yeah, just like, all right, he got the first technical, fine, you know, that happens. And then Kerr tried to get Looney in for him, I think both because he had three fouls and also just to be like, all right, you know, we better get him out of the game before he gets another technical. And not fast enough, because Draymond, as he was out on the bench, basically just continued his walk past the bench into the locker room and was not seen again.
He has 10 technicals on the year. I think that's the last count I saw. So that means he's six away from a suspension, something DeMarcus Cousins has already dealt with and presumably will deal with again. I'm not particularly concerned about the cumulative part of it, just because it resets for the playoffs. But the fact that Draymond still, you know, this wasn't an important game, but that he just like couldn't let it go, even though it wasn't really helping anything, you know, his point had already been made. That is a little bit of a concern, because that wasn't why he got suspended in the NBA Finals, but some of the earlier technicals that he picked up that added together to make that happen were of that variety.
Yeah, the earlier flagrants, you mean?
Yeah, flagrants, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the one in particular, the Beasley one at the end of Game 3 of the Rocket series. Yeah, and I thought, like, you know, and this wasn't like the ref was overreacting either. Like, Ron Gerritsen was just sort of like, he had like the most chill, like technical signal that I recall seeing in a while, to tee him up the first time. And then he continued on, and Ron's like, all right, you know, I got to do this. And, you know, Draymond, clearly you could see, was mouthing some choice words. Don't know exactly what he said at the end, but it wasn't one of those ones where like, I can't believe he got ejected. That's for sure.
One other weird nugget from this game that I didn't realize until I was doing my stuff for The Athletic is that this was another time when Klay Thompson outscored the Sacramento Kings in the third quarter of a game at Oracle.
Yeah, like 17 to 15, right?
Right, which is, you know, not the same as the 37, but still pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy, like, how good this team is in the third quarter compared to the first half sometimes.
They're plus, I think it's 22.4. I tweeted this out already. Plus 22.4 in the third quarter. That's net rating, so outscoring per 100 possessions. The Spurs are at around 13, and then no one else is over 8.2. So they're dominating in that stretch, and Kerr has done a good job of adjusting. But also, the Warriors usually, I mean, there are a couple exception games, like against the Mavericks at Oracle when they were just flat in that third quarter when they had a lead. Actually, the Raptors game was like that too. Generally speaking, they're flatter in the first half and then make up for it in the second.
What do you think of my idea that Steve Kerr should just have some games where he just reduces the Stars' minutes so much that they just end up being closer at the end just so they can get some more reps in those kind of games?
I'm good with it. It's not a big issue if they lose. You know, you're not playing with fire in the sense that, oh no, if we lose an extra two or three games by reducing that and trying some different lineup combinations, that we're at risk of losing the number one seed. And I'm using the we in terms of Kerr's mentality, not my own. And that gives them an extra level of freedom to really fiddle with this and also to try out some lineups. One of the elements that I've been rooting for, though I haven't talked about this that much publicly, is I want to see the Warriors use some all bench lineups, because my pet theory is that the Warriors should play their four all-stars together as much as they can in the playoffs. And if they can save 2 to 3 minutes per half with none of them on the floor, it makes it a lot more palatable to do that.
That's an interesting thought, like the start of the second quarter just for like 3.5 minutes or something, it's just all bench guys.
Yeah, and I'm including at this moment that Pachulia could theoretically be involved in that. Like, I haven't fiddled with exactly what the lineup would be, but maybe something like Livingston, Clark, Iguodala, West, and Pachulia or something like that, and just gum it up, play slow. It's sort of like what we've said Oklahoma City should do, of just gum up the works for a couple minutes, and then you can play the, you know, four all-stars together for 40 something minutes a game.
Yeah, well, clearly the sky is falling after that Denver loss. Radical experimentation is required. Now, I mean, I think that's an interesting idea. The chances of Kerr doing either of the things we're talking about are almost nothing. But it would be, I do think this team needs some extra clutch reps, because think of all, like, can you think of like a single big shot in a clutch moment that this team has hit? I mean, Kevin Durant's dunk that tied the game against Miami before they lost it on the Waiters jumper. No other ones really come to mind this entire season. Maybe there was one in that Rockets game that we're forgetting about because they lost that. But other than that, nothing else comes to mind for me.
It hasn't really been that kind of a season. I mean, remember last year, we've talked about this a couple times on Dunked On, that they had all these crazy comebacks late. And so they had those defining moments. A lot of them were Curry and various guys. But this year, they haven't had many close games, period. And then they haven't had many definitive moments, win or loss. And you're right, the ones that I'm thinking of are in losses.
You know, I think, what is their point differential? Like 2 points better now than last year overall was for the season?
I think that sounds about right.
Yeah.
So I haven't looked at it after tonight's game.
And you know, obviously the record is a lot worse, so they were much better. I mean, the sheer number of just crazy comeback wins that this team, I mean, this team was easily the best clutch regular season team of all time last year. And they've probably been, you know, I think well below average. The Kings game, they didn't have really any clutch shots in that either. Like Steph's shot went in and out.
He missed two layups late.
Yeah, that's right. And Draymond Green had a wide open three that could have tied it on that last possession. So it's just, I mean,
And Durant had a missed shot. I think that was against the Pistons, but they ended up winning that game anyway.
Yeah. Anything else you wanted to talk about here?
Not really.
What about Papa G? Can we
talk about the Boulevard of Broken Dreams lineup that the Kings trotted out there? I mean,
is the Papa G dream broken already?
No. I'm just being glib.
Well, our dream of him getting a 5-second back down violation.
No. That's saved for summer league and D league games. But, but actually that ties in with something that I want to talk about, which was that I was a little bit concerned that it's a 5-minute sample, so you don't want to read too much into it, that Damian Jones didn't really pop at all during those minutes. And granted, Papa G was fine. He actually has some nice touch around the basket. And like, there are lots of different ways that a young guy who's flawed can look good and bad. And you didn't really see him as a rim runner. You didn't really see him as a rim protector or a shot blocker, any of the, or even a solid rebounder in that stretch. And it's not catastrophic over one game or two, but when you kind of start to see a pattern that he's not really showing that very often, it's a little bit of a concern. But again, he's young and missed all of the beginning part of the season. So I'm not saying the sky is falling, but it's something I'm watching.
I mean, him not being in the training camp, I think, is a problem. And the criticism of him always has been his feel. But there's this thought that he is going to be, you know, some great guy getting up for alley-oops and really was going to, like, you know, dunk on people and have that kind of nuclear athleticism. I have not seen that. Like, maybe every once in a while it'd be like, can get a running start and he's in space, he can really get up. But his, around the basket, like, he's not going to just, like, turn and dunk over people. Like, he kind of has to, like, pump fake, and he gets knocked off balance and has to go up with a hook shot. I think the best thing about him that we've seen so far is his mid-range jumper, and that's not a shot that you're ever going to want him taking with all this talent around him. And then defensively, he hasn't really shown anything either. And even in his D-League games, the only way that he really has looked good to me is in, some of his post-ups, like going to a jump hook and stuff. Like, I don't care about that. Like, he's not going to be a post-up option at the NBA level. So is he going to be good defensively? Is he going to intimidate people? Is he going to rebound? I haven't seen any of that from him. It's early, but he was an older rookie too. Granted, coming off that pec injury, but you know, that's not like a knee injury or something. Like, his legs should be working just fine.
Well, he couldn't run for a while with it. When I interviewed him, he talked about that, but it's still...
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. All right. Maybe that is an issue. Yeah. Cause you can't move like your upper body.
Right. Yeah. I talked to, he had to get back from that, and he couldn't run for, I think it was like a couple months. So I'm sure that didn't help. And there, you can, like, you know, get in the mental part of the game, but physically that's certainly a weak point. So I want to give him more time, but an important distinction, which is more of a positive for McCaw than a negative for Jones, is that McCaw has already shown how he can be a small cog in a big machine. And that is the most likely role, even if he does well, that he will have for the Warriors.
Yeah, McCaw's feel really just continues to impress me. He's not going to be replacing Andre Iguodala anytime soon in terms of, like, his one-on-one defense and all the great stuff that Andre does. But I think he can be an effective player. Maybe he can replace Sean Livingston next year to some effectiveness. Won't give him the post scoring, but maybe can at least, you know, be a bigger guard off the bench who can help a little bit.
I've also been fiddling with the idea of Durant having those Iguodala defensive assignments and just kind of floating with McCaw and Thompson and just basically assuming that no team is going to have you're not going to use that combination against a team that has a power forward that's going to kill you, and just seeing how it works.
Yeah, that might be it too. It all depends, of course, what KD wants to do in terms of taking the maximum amount of money that he can get or not. But yeah, I thought Papa G had a nice dunk. He actually, like, he didn't look terrible. I mean, that poor Kings lineup, right? Like, they had no point guard, so they're running Willie Cauley-Stein at the three, and then Malachi Richardson injures his hamstring. It looked pretty bad in, like, the last minute and a half of the game, so Tolliver has to come back in, and they're playing him at the two. They tried a 2-3 zone for a possession, and Ian Clark hit a three. I was just like, man, King, talk about limping into the All-Star break for the Kings.
Yeah, and they're still hopeful, I guess, that they're going to try to face the Warriors in the first round of the playoffs and lose in 4 or 5 games. But hey, if that's what they want to do and lose their draft pick, then by all means.
Joe Lacob is all about these 5-game series. Like, make some extra gate.
the gentleman's sweep is a very good thing for the home team. Well, thanks again for taking the time.
Absolutely. I don't know when we're ever going to talk to each other again. Maybe sometime. But, you know, it was good to have this rare chance to sit down and record a podcast.
Thanks again to Nate Duncan for taking the time. You can listen to him on the Dunked On Basketball podcast. You can watch and listen to the two of us on the Twitter NBA show. Actually, it will not be me on the one that is on Thursday for the trade deadline, because as I have said before, I will be gone. And also, you can check out the Twitter NBA show second stream, and you should also follow him on Twitter. He's awesome on Twitter. Nate Duncan, NBA, NateDuncan, NBA. My schedule has actually changed around a little bit. It's not a big deal, but I'm actually not covering All-Star now. I had a logistical issue, but I will still be gone for all of next week. So I might do something for Thursday night, Friday morning, depending on if I have an idea or what my own timing is with everything else that's going on. But if not, you know, then this will stand for a little bit, and it's going to be a fun run. So you'll know if there's an episode, if it comes up. Otherwise, it will be a week off for me. I'll have something in all likelihoods the following Sunday night. I believe that's the 26th, and we'll be going full steam from then until the Warriors are eliminated from the playoffs. So if you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com, @DannyLarue on Twitter. Considering I'm going to be gone, my response time is going to be worse than it usually is, and it's often not great. But if you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. Also, if you want to support the show, leave a rating, leave a review in the podcast player of your choice. Please download every episode, subscribe. Those things really do help. And also check out our sponsors. In this episode, it is SeatGeek, the go-to app that I use personally for buying and selling tickets. You download the app, use the promo code LOWARRIORS for Locked On Warriors, and you get $20 back on your first purchase, and you can check it out. I mean, it's really a win-win in that way, and something that I personally do use all the time and used to be how I made my living. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.